everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. Thanks for joining me for the second part of It's All About Food. And moving on, we're going to be talking about something that goes very well with food, and that's drinks, especially cocktails, and some of the stories behind these drinks. So I want to welcome my next guest, Jeanette Hurt. She has a new book out called Drink Like a Woman. Jeanette is the award-winning writer and author of 8 culinary and drink books. And she's a full-time journalist and has written about spirits, wine, and food for thekitchen.com, Four Seasons Magazine, Wine Enthusiast, Entrepreneur.com, Esquire.com, and dozens of other publications. She's a recipient of the 2008 Midwest Travel Writers Mark Twain Award for Best Midwestern Travel Article, and so much more. You can read about her bio on my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com. Jeanette, welcome to It's All About Food. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, when I first saw this book, I thought, yeah, this is fun stuff. And then I read it, and it's more than fun.
I'm so glad I got that part.
Excuse me?
I'm so glad you got that part of the book because it's fun, but there's a whole lot more going on.
So I don't know what your politics are. My listeners know what my politics are. And the whole election scene has been very disturbing to me. And I've been looking for inspiration all around to continue my work to make the world a better place and to encourage liberty and justice for all. And there are you're including so many stories about great women in this book. They're just brief, but they're enough to remember how women were so discriminated against. The images that many men had about women over the last few hundred years, and of course longer than that, about we could not do. And it's so easy to forget in this current time when we have so much.
That's exactly right. And it was my book focused on the history of women in drink and women in bartending, but it also just goes across the history of women, of course. And the one thing that shocked me in researching this book, well, there were lots of things that shocked me, but until 1971, there was one last state that didn't allow women to bartend.
1971!
Yes. Now, take a guess. Which state was that?
Oh, God. I don't know. Michigan? I don't know.
No. Michigan has another interesting story, but it was California, if you can believe that. California.
Oh, goodness.
And it wasn't and the whole story about how California women got the right to bartend, because at one time, 26 states outlawed women bartenders.
Wow.
And
wow.
It didn't start after the end of World War II, but it really continued. If you go back historically, especially in the late 1800s, we went from the early 1800s, late 1700s, and bartending was an okay profession, even for Puritan women. It was okay for them to bartend and own or manage a tavern. In fact, one of my favorite drinks is Start the Revolution, and it's likely that an American woman invented the cocktail, which I think is fantastic. Now, if you go into any sort of cocktail history, you'll hear 1,000 different stories. But the most likely one is that a woman named Catherine Hustler, who was a sutler during the American Revolution, that meant she outfit troops with booze because the troops needed booze in order to fight. And she and her husband had owned a tavern in eastern New York. After the war, they moved to western New York to a town called Lewiston, and they opened another tavern called Hustler's Tavern. And in 1821, a certain American novelist, James Fenimore Cooper, spent his summer there working on his second novel, The Spy, which was, of course, about the American Revolution. And he was so enchanted with Catherine that he based a character on her named Elizabeth Betty Flanagan. And in his book, he describes how Betty created the cocktail. Now, we don't know at which point truth became fiction or fiction became truth, but we do know that she was serving cocktails by 1821 and a lot longer because she had owned the bar since the early 1800s at that location. And she also was an astute businesswoman. During the War of 1812, she also served British soldiers, so her bar was one of the few buildings in town not to be burned. And she was still bartending and managing her tavern when James Fenimore Cooper was working on his novel. So likely he based that character on her recollections of the war. And I think that's just fabulous. But you go from 1820s, and it's still okay for women to own and manage taverns. Some places, you know, you had to have a male relative as an overseer or in case something got out of hand. But mostly it was okay. And then you go to the late 1800s, and women weren't allowed in many saloons. In my state of Wisconsin, which at one point was a progressive state, now some people call it a purple state. I guess it depends on who you talk to in my state. But one of the interesting things is women were allowed to drink in Wisconsin taverns, but they had to go through a side or women's and children entrance to the bar. So if you go to historic taverns in Wisconsin, you'll notice they have a back door, they have a front door, and then they have this weird side door, and that was the woman's entrance.
Who makes these things up?
Crazy, right?
It is crazy, yes. But somehow, I don't know, some guys felt better that way.
They must have. But the thing is this continued for a long time. And one of the biggest problems for women who wanted to bartend, because, of course, there's a whole phenomenon of prohibition which taught women how to drink. Because women got to go out and drink in public, which was shocking back then. And after Prohibition, there were so many men who were dismayed that there was this one gentleman who wrote an essay about her hooking her French heel over the brass rail and how he lamented the death of the old saloon. And so I have a drink in my book called The Invasion of Women, because he really hated the invasion of women into his sanctity space. Or
I could imagine reading an article like that today on Breitbart. Oh, really? You know, we get that all the time. These kind of twisted stories.
Isn't it? Well, and the interesting thing is of course, after Prohibition, then we had World War II, and a lot of women replaced the male bartenders who went off to war.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they came back, of course, they wanted their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't want to have the competition from women. And there was a hotel and restaurant workers union, and they represented a lot of bartenders. And they didn't allow women to have membership. They allowed it during the war, but then afterwards they didn't. And then they actively lobbied state and local officials to pass ordinances and state laws against women bartenders. And, of course, there were lots of states doing this, but one such state was the state of Michigan. And Margaret and Valentine Gessert, a mother and daughter duo, decided that when Margaret's husband died, that she should really be allowed to bartend and continue operating the family bar, because in Michigan, you could be a bartender if your husband or father was a bartender or owned the bar.
Mm-hmm.
So they felt that was discriminatory. They hired a very feminist lawyer who represented a lot of women, and she pushed for this. And it worked its way through the Michigan courts, eventually ending up before the United States Supreme Court in Gessert versus Cleary in 1948. And unfortunately, the very sexist Supreme Court justices of the time said, well, of course it wasn't an unchivalrous desire of male bartenders to protect their profession. They just want to protect women. So that set the precedent. Now, one thing I found out after my book went to print is that these plucky Michigan barmaids, as they were known, because female bartenders in that era were known as barmaids, kept pushing their local legislators so that by 1955, women in Michigan could bartend. However, since the United States Supreme Court had already heard this court case, then all these other states passed laws. They didn't start changing until the 1960s when, of course, we had the Civil Rights Act and the Equal Pay Act, which allowed women to sue when they were discriminated against in work environments. As we talked about earlier, the last state to hold out was California.
I'm still reeling from that one. I moved to California from New York in 1982, only 11 years after that. And I thought, you know, the world was my oyster. I could do anything. And I had no idea that just 11 years before they had turned that around.
If you had wanted to be a bartender in California, you couldn't. Now, the whole story behind California woman getting the right to bartend, it started with the owner of a strip club called the Classic Cat. And the guy had the idea that after a woman shook something on stage, then they'd go and shake drinks behind the bar. And he, of course, wanted them to be topless. The state Supreme Court in California was ready to dismiss this lawsuit just because they're like, we're not going to touch something about naked women bartenders. Except there was a very smart female law clerk who had just started working. Her name was Wendy Webster Williams. And she said, I know this sounds really cheesy and sleazy, but it's really about women's rights and women's employment. So her justice said, go ahead, write me a letter explaining why we need to take the case. She convinced him. He convinced the other justices. They took up the case. Not only that, once the briefs started coming in, she realized, well, these are strip club lawyers. They're not so smart. She didn't like their arguments. So she convinced a female law professor and some law students to write an amicus brief, which the strip club lawyers then used. They never got the right to bartend naked, but as a result of this law case, women in California got the right to bartend. And what's amazing is that from that point on, women started joining the profession by leaps and bounds. And today, more than 60% of all bartenders are women. Now, what I find striking about this, I think this is absolutely amazing, especially because back in 1895, 0.2% of all bartenders were women. That meant, to give this a little more perspective, a woman who was a doctor wielding a stethoscope was 50 times more common than a woman wielding a shaker. And of course, you know, 1890s, 1900s, women doctors were not common either.
Yeah. It's a strange world we live in, and I don't pretend to understand any of it. So this book is full of many, many wonderful stories like that, and it got me inspired. It got me angry, and it got me wanting to have a drink, that's for sure.
Well, I think that's a good solution when you get frustrated and you need some inspiration. Pick a story, because there's a lot of women who did some amazing things, and that was one fun thing for me. Growing up as a little girl, I loved reading biographies of women who made a difference, people like Harriet Tubman and Susan B. Anthony, and Nellie Bly was one of my favorites. So, of course, I have a Nellie Bly tie instead of a Mai tie in my book.
Yeah, so the drink names are really wonderful. The Tub Mantini and the Dina Colada. Are you calling that Dina or DNA Colada?
DNA really or Dina Colada.
Yes.
And that was a story that shocked me, too, because there's this woman. I remember studying in biology about how DNA was discovered. And I didn't realize that they actually stole research from a female scientist and used that to help them make their conclusions.
Well, you might have been surprised reading it for the first time, but I hope you're not surprised today if you heard something like that, because apparently ethics do not abound.
No, they don't. And there's all sorts of excuses.
Yes. I want to just, for a brief moment, talk about some of the drinks and the ingredients. You may know I'm a vegan. I don't know if you knew that.
Yes,
and I went through the whole book, read all the stories, and went through all of the recipes. And I want to tell you that, well, most of the drink recipes are vegan, but the ones that aren't, I can make vegan. So it's I stamped this vegan friendly. But I want to mention a few things for people that are concerned about animal ingredients. You can always go to a website called barnivore.com. Are you familiar with barnivore.com, Jeanette?
Love it.
Yeah, it's a great website where it lists what alcohol, beer, wine, and liquor are vegan or not vegan friendly. And if it's not listed, that just means they haven't connected with the producer. So you could email the producer and get back to them to find out what's in the drink. But there are many vegan alcoholic beverages, and more. For example, let's talk about Guinness for a minute. I have a silly story where I was living in France as an adult. I came back to New York, and then I went to visit my aunt and uncle for an overnight stay in Connecticut. And they made me dinner, and somehow we got into this macho scenario, my uncle and I, and we ended up doing 6 Guinness stouts chased by shots of tequila.
That's a fabulous story.
And I went to bed. I got up at like 5 in the morning, took a tub, and I was on my way. Because, you know, it's a macho kind of thing to show that you can hold your liquor. And I'm not a big drinker, but I think I got this from my dad where I could handle it. But I discovered that Guinness in the United States is not vegan friendly, although they are working on it and promise that by the end of 2016, they'll have some equipment going where they won't be using the fish gelatin anymore. So I look forward to that. And they're doing it because there's a percentage of people out there of the buying public that want it that way.
Well, and I think most people who like the taste would not be offended if it was vegan.
No, it tastes the same.
Good booze is good booze.
Exactly.
The other thing, in the meantime, I would suggest is contact some of your local craft brewing producers in your area, because you can always ask them, and usually you can call up the place and talk to the brewer or somebody close to the brewer to find out exactly how they make their beer. And there are a lot of fabulous stouts out there.
Oh, yeah.
So while you're waiting for Guinness, you might...
Yeah, I'm not deprived right now. I have I have all kinds of access to all the booze that I could possibly want. The other thing I wanted to mention, you have a few recipes that require egg whites, and I don't know if you've tried aquafaba yet.
I have not tried it in drinks.
Yeah,
the other
but
thing is, in general, when people use egg whites, it's for the texture.
Mm-hmm.
But you can take it out, and it will still taste just fine. It might not be as frothy, but who cares if it tastes good?
Right. Well, with bean water aquafaba, which is like the last 2 years has just gone crazy with what you can do with it. I mean, it's great because it's cheap, and it's easy to use, and it doesn't harm anybody. And it makes things really foamy and frothy.
Then that's what you use.
Yeah, and people are using it, which is really exciting. So, yeah, I just wanted to mention those few things.
And, I think those are great ideas.
Yeah, and then, of course, we vegans know that when recipes say use milk or ice cream or whipped cream, we've got in our back pocket all the great substitutes that can work instead of dairy ingredients. I remember the first time I had a white Russian that was vegan, and it was it was in the late 90s.
And I bet it was fabulous.
It was. I was so excited that the bar that I went to in this little place in Burlington, Vermont, actually had non-dairy milk.
Well, most bars also have coconut milk.
Yeah. And that's delicious.
They have to make pina coladas.
Some coconut mixes have dairy in them. Some don't. Depends. You can never be too careful.
I agree.
Yeah. And then Bailey's. I think you have a recipe that calls for Bailey's. And they've been talking about creating a non-dairy version called Almond.
I bet that's really good.
According to what I've read, they didn't realize what they were doing, and they included beeswax in the recipe, and now they're working to get it out because some of us don't want beeswax in our drinks. Yeah. Anyway, they're working on it, and I'm excited because that means, not just for vegans, but when you want to make a product better for health or the environment or animals, for all life on Earth, whatever it is, speak out and talk to the right sources, and we can make change all over the place, and then toast to it.
Well, I think you bring up a really valid point, which is you have to know the ingredients of your food. Mm. And so many people just take something off the shelf and they don't read the ingredients. And besides the animal products, there's a lot of different, not good for you chemicals in certain foods.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not good for anybody.
There were some liqueurs and drinks that you mentioned that I wasn't exactly familiar with, and I typed it out in Fernet Branca.
That's an Italian liqueur.
Yeah, with herbs and spices? It sounds wonderful.
It is a fantastic bitter liqueur, and it's used a lot of bartenders love to drink shots of it. It's also good as an aperitif or a digestif, and it's also really good with balancing different flavor profiles of drinks. One of my favorite drinks, which has Fernet Branca, is in Lucille's Balls.
Another great name and another great story.
Yes, which is the drink is a better tasting rum and coke. It's like the best Cuba Libre you'll ever have. And it's using the real cane syrup, cola, lime juice, and Fernet Branca. And something with Fernet Branca and cola just really go really well together. And that recipe comes from Julia Momose, a Chicago bartender who's absolutely amazing. And she's in charge of the Green River Bar Program.
My favorite drink is the Manhattan.
Ooh.
And I didn't see it in here or a variation on it.
Well, there's the Renaissance Womanhattan.
Oh, I missed it. I'm
so
glad you told me that.
So, of course, there's a Manhattan, but it's not a Manhattan, it's a Womanhattan.
Of course. Oh, gosh, I'll have to check that out. I'm a fan of bourbon. I like Maker's Mark and anything. And on the rare occasions when I'm feeling ill, like feeling a cold coming on, there's nothing like a warm drink with a little splash of that in there.
A little splash of bourbon, a little splash of fresh lemon juice.
Mm.
Maybe a little bit of a sweetener if you need it, but I don't think you need sweetener with bourbon. I think
so. You have the monthly medicinal, which looked really good.
That is another lovely drink. I think it's a good thing because, the story behind that drink is when women were not supposed to drink alcohol, a lot of these medicinals that were sold in pharmacies were really just booze with some herbs and spices added to it.
Yep. Oh, you know, any way to make a buck, you know, they'll just repackage something and get it through and people buy it.
Well, they do.
Yeah,
and they did.
And we should. But anyway, it looks really good with pomegranate liqueur and hibiscus tea and bourbon.
Well, bourbon's wonderful.
Bourbon is wonderful. All right. Well, I really enjoyed reading Drink Like a Woman, Shakespeare, Conquer, Repeat. I'm glad that the first recipe was the one you mentioned, Start the Revolution.
Which I think it's ongoing, isn't it?
Yeah, we may need to mix up a lot of these, Start the Revolution, because there may be a new one starting soon.
Well, I wanted to add one little thing since holidays are coming.
Yes.
And with that drink or other drinks that have bourbon, one of my favorite things for the holidays is you take 2 cups of bourbon and you take 1 cup of fresh cranberries.
Mm.
You put it in a glass jar and you let it sit for a couple of weeks.
Mm.
And you get this lovely, fragrant, cranberry fragrant infused booze.
Oh.
And then you can substitute it in any drink that requires bourbon. And it suddenly becomes a holiday cocktail.
Wow, that sounds fantastic. But is it bitter? Because cranberries need to be sweetened.
No, it isn't.
Wow.
I mean, it's really fragrant. It's red. I think it tastes fabulous.
Okay, so what is the recipe? How much to how much?
2 cups of bourbon, or you could take 2 cups of whatever your favorite spirit is, and 1 cup of fresh cranberries.
Okay.
If you're using a white spirit, I wouldn't let it go for 2 to 4 weeks, which you can let it go with bourbon that long. But if you are using a white spirit, you know, give it a week, maybe a week and a half, and you'll have this red blush-colored spirit, which you can then use. Right now I have a batch going with some white rum and some tequila, and then they're both separate, and then also one, of course, with bourbon for the holidays.
I am very excited about that. Thank you, Jeanette, for sharing that with me. I'm doing it. No question about it.
You're very welcome.
Okay, I'm raising a glass to you. Happy holidays. And I really enjoyed reading Drink Like a Woman.
I'm so, so grateful you did. And I have had so much fun talking with you.
Thank you.
If you ever want to talk about cocktails or famous women, I would love to talk with you again. So
okay,
cheers.
Okay, that sounds great. Yeah. Awesome. Happy holidays. And thanks for joining
me.
It's All About Food. Oh, we're coming to the end. Well, I'm Karen Hartglass. This has been It's All About Food. Find me at responsibleeatingandliving.com. Read my daily blog, What Vegans Eat. We've got great recipes for the holidays for you, and have a delicious week.